From west to east and kingdom to kingdom, you're listening to the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. Connecting with Walt is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. Visit them on the web at dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello, and welcome to episode 72 of the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. I am your host and Diz historian, Michael Bowling, and I am joined by my co-host, producer, and good friend, Craig Williams. Craig, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you, Michael?
Oh, I'm doing well, thank you. So, have you recovered from the food and wine festival at Epcot, or are you still tasting everything?
Oh, I'm still tasting everything. So it has been a busy time. So it's all kind of been a blur, actually. So it just everything feels like it's one after the next thing after the next thing after the next thing, and getting ready for Halloween now. So it's I've officially now kicked it into full gear of getting ready. So,
you have your costume already?
I don't have the costume. I don't think this year I'm doing anything costume oriented. Did that last year, but I say that every year around this time. It's like, nope, I'm not doing anything costume related this year. I'm just not. I'm not wasting the money. I'm not putting the time and effort into it. And inevitably, it's like a week before Halloween or a week before I need it. And then I have to rush last second. And that's why my air conditioner is still stained with red paint from last year when I had to throw a bunch of paint all over a shirt to make it look like blood at the very last second. And didn't think about the fact that you know, wet paint is going to just travel to anything that it touches. So, no, but we've been going through all our decorations and getting in and out, we have more shelving than we did last year, so we're trying different places where we're putting anything, of course. I've just gone on this tiki mug haul probably in the past, it's been about 2 months. I mean, I've always been obsessed with tiki mugs. Everyone who knows me knows that. It's one of the things I love most. But when I was on the train to Alaska, or the train to Canada, technically, during my Alaska cruise, I caught a good deal on Zulily, and I got the entire set of the classic monster tiki mugs for a great price, but those took months to ship, so I just got those recently, like within the past month and a half or so. And then back before Comic-Con happened, I placed a pre-order on the Serial Monster tiki mugs that I didn't know whether or not I was going to get, and then just out of the blue I got an email saying that they shipped, and they just got here last week, so now I'm trying to figure out where to put my 9 tiki mugs that I've collected over the past couple weeks. And all I can say is my wife is not happy about it, but I am thrilled.
I'm not quite into autumn yet. It's still quite warm here, and although we're supposedly later this week we're dropping into the 70s. Well, plummet is more the word. Because, you know, we were in the hundreds last week, and then we've gradually, you know, 90s, 80s, so we're going down, but it doesn't seem to last. Some of the trees are just starting to turn color, but they still have a long way to go.
Yeah, I mean, I was grumpy about all of it. I didn't want to take in the change, and then inevitably I opened up my first box of Count Chocula, and then it's no looking back from there.
They still make that?
Oh, absolutely.
Or does it just come out at Halloween?
Only Halloween. So, they still release the main three, the Count Chocula, Frankenberry, and Boo Berry. But a couple years back, they actually released Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy, and that was amazing. I actually liked both of those more than Frankenberry and Boo Berry, but I am obsessed with everything monster cereal. It's just, there is nothing that makes me more happy than when Count Chocula rolls around. And it's always so fresh because they only make it for this one time a year. Oh, it's just perfect.
Well, I know you were looking for that puzzle.
I found it.
Yeah, I saw that. Congratulations.
It's, again, another thing that my wife did not kind of agree on whether or not we needed it. But I think one day down the road she'll appreciate the fact that we have it.
Well, I'm sure she will. If not, your future children will.
Yeah, sure.
Well, speaking of cartoon characters, and in our series about the history of Disney animated films, we have been discussing the four phases of Mickey Mouse's career. Phase one is from Mickey's screen appearance in 1928's Steamboat Willie until his 1940 appearance in Fantasia. And during these 12 years, Mickey Mouse became one of the most popular stars in the United States. Phase two begins on the eve of World War II and lasts for two decades. During this phase, Mickey's screen stardom starts to fade. He experiences a revival with the debut of the Mickey Mouse Club television show and the opening of Disneyland in 1955. Phase three covers the turbulent 1960s and into the presidency of Ronald Reagan in the 1980s. Now, Mickey was embraced by the pop art culture and became a time-tested classic. Phase four of Mickey's career is from the mid-1980s through present day. Throughout the fractious political and social climate, Mickey Mouse has now become a global icon driven by nostalgia and brilliant marketing. So in this episode of Connecting with Walt, Craig and I are going to continue our exploration of phase one of Mickey's career, from Steamboat Willie to Fantasia, which we began in episode 66 by taking a look at the Mickey Mania that swept the nation in the late 20s and 30s. And with the anniversary of Mickey's 90th birthday coming up, and since we're talking about merchandising, I thought it would be fun to begin this episode by unboxing the D23 party box I received in the mail this past week. Now, Craig, were you familiar with this party box that D23 was sending out?
I actually only found out about it because I think it was Luella, so who you might know from the Disneyland podcast, as well as all the times that she's been on other stuff, including this show, when she was here for trivia. But I think I saw her post a photo of it on Facebook, but just in as a passing glance. But I've got to be perfectly honest. I let my renewal for D23 go to like the last week before they said I would have to rejoin all over again. So I still have yet. I finally did renew, but I still haven't received my gold member gift. And I've been out of the loop on D23 as a whole, so I don't really know much about this party. Okay. So I'm happy we're talking about it.
Yeah. Well, you'll like the gold member gift this year because it's all about Mickey Mouse.
Yes.
All kinds of great memorabilia. Well, this party box, D23 sent out for free. You had to sign up for it, but there were stipulations in that you had to agree that you would have a party for Mickey. Basically, between certain dates, the last couple of weeks of September, and that you would post it on social media, and you had to indicate that, you know, is it going to be on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and you know, all kind, you know, YouTube and a few others that I'm not on, and then you have to use a certain hashtag, you know, and things like that in order to post the you know, post your photos and videos and all that. So I ordered one with I know other people ordered it and immediately began planning their party. I, of course, did not. So I just ordered it. So I thought it'd be fun. I just opened it, but I didn't go through the contents. So I thought it would be fun to do that with all of you out there. So first of all, it comes in a really cool, very sturdy cardboard box. And we're going to have photos. We'll have some photos in our show notes of this.
Yes.
It says D23, the official Disney fan club. It's a red, it's basically a yellow box, but it has red and black Mickey icons on it. Two big ones. Very stylized. Very artistic. I like it. They're off-centered and all that. But this is a good box that I can keep some sort of Disney things in. Maybe pins or buttons and something. When you open it, it says that the inside cover says D23, the official fan club. The inside lid, I should say. And then it has, you know how they like all those little Mickey parts on things? There's the little black icon, then there's a little yellow shoe, and then there's his white glove, and then his little red pants, little red shorts. And so those are scattered around. It almost looks like wallpaper. And a thing, and right in the middle it says D23, the official Disney fan club. Then there's a little postcard in here. And let's see. This is basically all kinds of promotions in here to promote D23. So they talk about how we're excited you'll be throwing a D23 themed party for our pal Mickey in your hometown. Between September 8th to 30th, 2018, you along with other D23 members across the country will be celebrating, and we want to help you get things started. So inside this box, please find a variety of items to help you with your party planning. Stop by d23.com/party for recipes, decorating ideas, and more. I will have to check that out. We want to see your party in action on social media. Share your favorite Mickey recipe. Give us a sneak peek at your decor and post those pictures from the main event. Be sure to use hashtag D23Party so we can follow along. And then on the back, there's a promotional code where if you share, hey, if I share this with you, Craig, you can get $5 off your membership now through October 6, 2018.
So, of course, I just renewed.
Oh, okay. So people can get points. So if you get one person to register, you get an exclusive D23 gold member pin. There's 3 points a pin and a D23 Mickey Mouse print, and then 5 or more points a pin and print, and 1 year a D23 gold membership extension. So that's pretty cool.
There you go. So all of our audience, start harassing Michael on social media.
That's right. That's right. If you're going to the D23 Expo and you have not gotten your membership yet, send me a message, michael@wdwinfo.com or at connectwalt, and mm-hmm. I'll give you this promotional code and tell you how you can use me as your reference, and maybe I'll get something cool and you'll get $5 off.
Yeah.
And then it has the promotional code here. They give you a sheet of little cards that I guess you can give out at your party. They're all perforated. It says, become a D23 gold member and save $5 today. And the promotional code's on there. And then on the back, it has all of the info on there. So anyway, so that is very cool. And it's all, you know, Mickey colored and all that, those little cards. Then I talked with a couple of listeners about this who also got the box, because this thing is like right on top. I don't know what you're supposed to do with this. It's part of something that is for sale in the Shop Disney Parks. And what it is it's part of a three-piece set. It's this silicone sort of form that you use for breakfast. And some people got the Mickey icon. I think some people get a glove or something. And then other people get the what the set is, you know, the Mickey parts.
Yeah.
So you get the little head, you get the glove,
or you get
his pants. So I got the pants, and I have absolutely no idea what you're supposed to do with this thing. I mean, unless you're going to make eggs or pancakes or something for your party, I don't know what you do with this. So if anybody has any ideas, let me know.
Use it as even though it would not probably cut well since it's silicone, you could still use it to mold cookies or
brownies. Well, that's what I said. I said that to my two friends, and they did not think that was a bright idea.
I mean, if it's silicone, technically you could bake it in there so it would hold its form the entire time, too. But
that's true.
Then again, I'm not a baker. I am a cook, but baking it never comes out right. So maybe don't take my advice on that one.
Okay. Then you get some plastic cutleryware. There is a package of 24 assorted plastic cutleries, 8 forks, 8 knives, 8 spoons that are washable and reusable. These are black. And then there is another set that are red. So you have two of the Mickey colors, and then to round it off, there are yellow, there's a package of yellow beverage napkins. So there's your...
Perfect.
Add to your table decor in here. And you have red. I love it because I guess they went to Party City or something and got these because the prices are still on everything. You get 20 red dessert plates. 99 cents. Wow, it says on here. And anyway, so that's neat. And then, oh, and you get 24, these are like from my childhood. Before we had plastic straws, we had paper straws. So all of you who are fussing about, oh, they're going to be paper straws. Yeah, that's what my generation grew up with. And we still sipped our sodas, you know, through them just fine. And our milkshakes.
I don't use any straws, only for milkshakes. Yeah. Pretty much.
Well, anyway, 24 like peppermint striped red and white paper straws. Very festive. So, anyway, so those are cute. And then, ooh, what's this? Oh, D23 red balloons. So, a little package of those.
Are there 23 in there?
Oh, no. There's probably 1, 2, 3, 4. I'd say 6.
That's
5
a
or
missed
6
opportunity.
In here. I know, and there's not many of them. And then they show you on here the proper inflation guide, so you know if you have not enough helium, too much helium, and the proper inflation. And they're red, and then they just, in white, they say D23, an official Disney fan club. So, of course, you're going to have to get black and yellow balloons, I imagine, to round it out. Oh, there's party prizes. There are little D23 keychains. They are plastic. They're little. They look somewhat sturdy. They are. They're little squares, and then in like Lucite or something plastic, yeah. And then inside there's diagonals, a black stripe, a red stripe, and a yellow stripe, and they have little dots on them. And that seems to be the color theme. And then there's a Mickey icon head in there. Then on the back it says, of course, D23, the official fan club. It's yellow with black text on there. So that's pretty cool, actually.
Oh yeah.
It's a little party favors there. What is this? Oh, are these sticks for the balloons? I have no idea what these are. These are just 4 plastic sticks. So I imagine they're for the balloons.
I would say so. Yeah.
I think, these must be, these are little table name tags, little table tags, place setting tag. What do they call those things? And what they are is, again, it's the diagonal black, red, and yellow stripes with the little dots. And then there's a place you can put everybody's name in. And then it says D23, the official Disney fan club. So everybody knows where they should sit. Ooh, what's this? Oh my goodness, Mylar balloons. These are Mickey, the true original. You get 10 Mylar balloons in here. And they have Mickey's little face on here. Oh, and wow. It's pretty cool. It's the pie-eyed Mickey. Okay. So it's the original Mickey. Okay, that is cool.
So what you're saying is there was only 9 in there.
Yeah. It says 10. Well, it's in an exotic language from our friends south of the border. Well, but I see the number 10.
Now, if you open it up and you only find 9 and one of those just happens to come my way, I mean, I don't think...
I don't think
Jeffrey's going to come after you.
No, that's true. Okay, then... Oh, and then for all your other decorations, $10 off anything you order at Party City. And then... what's all this? A sheet of D23, like tattoos. get the kids tatted up young here.
Yeah.
And what it is it's the I Love D23, the official Disney fan club with Mickey looking out of the heart. Again, it's the classic Mickey. Or then the Mickey icon, and it says D23 inside. Oh, and then trivia questions. So you can play a game. So, I might be able to use these after the party.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
So anyway,
multiple
we'll see.
Uses.
Yeah. And then, okay. Oh, and then these must be little decorations. There is, oh, you know what? These are the, like, when you take photos, this is so people can hold them up in their photos. You know how people do that?
Yeah.
So there's a little Sorcerer Mickey hat. You punch these out. They're little, like, cardstock. And it says D23, but it says Sorcerer Mickey hat. Then there's another one where it's a Mickey glove that says D23 on it. And these aren't huge. And then once it's proud member of D23, hashtag D23 party, there's another punch out of, oh, Mickey ears you can sort of hold above your head, and it says D23. Oh, a whole bunch of cool stick. These are cool. Sheets of stickers, and it has Mickey through the years. And it has Steamboat Willie and the original Mickey, Ub Iwerks Mickey, the classic pose Mickey that you see on all the shirts, Sorcerer Mickey, the Mickey Mouse Club band leader Mickey, and then contemporary Mickey, you know, where he's not white, his face isn't white.
Yes.
So where he's strolling. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these. So basically this is sort of set up for 10 people. And because there's 2 sets on 1 sheet. And that is everything. You know, for free, I think this is pretty darn good.
I completely agree. So, and it seems like whoever they sent to Party City to do all that shopping really kind of knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. So now, of course, I have to plan a party. But what I was thinking, since I'm a terrible party planner, you know, I have to celebrate Mickey's birthday by the end of the month. And I thought it would be fun if there are other Connecting with Walt listeners in the Sacramento area. If maybe we... Are you already planning a party? Do you already have a box? Maybe we can get together and combine our resources, maybe have a big party. Maybe we can plan a party in a park and invite other Connecting with Walt listeners and have sort of a Connecting with Walt get together and a party. Maybe we can make it a potluck and all that. So it's easy on everybody. So I think this is just a great opportunity for us to get together. And, you know, we can add to the, we can talk about, okay, what else do we want to bring to add to all this? And then we'll take photos, post them on social media, and, you know, just dazzle everybody with how much fun, you know, the Connecting with Walt, you know, Northern California listeners have celebrating our favorite mouse. So if this is something you're interested in, post it on our Twitter page, @ConnectWalt. And then, you know, I'll be in touch with you. If this is something, if you're in the Sacramento area, maybe we can get together and plan something on a weekend in September. And there's not that many of them left. So anyway, so I think it'd be fun. So, Craig, you going to come out for it?
I would absolutely love to. I doubt that there will be any cheap plane tickets.
You never know. Southwest has been doing sales lately.
Maybe. We'll have to see. I won't say no just because I've done crazier things with the last second. So
you never know. That would be a great surprise.
It would.
So, maybe we should hold it in front of the Walt Disney Family Museum. If you come out, then we should just do this in front of the Walt Disney Family Museum.
I mean, that would be the main reason why. So I'm joking. I love always anytime you get the chance to meet new people, meet old friends as well too, and just the nice thing about our community is there's never an awkwardness because we always have one thing that we know we can all talk about, and that's how much we love Disney.
That's right, and food. So I hope I hear from people. I think this would be a lot of fun. So, and just a nice way for us to get together in Northern California. So anyway. Oh, hey, you said you got that Life magazine, Mickey at 90. Have you had a chance to go through it yet?
No. That's the short answer. It's still just sitting, but...
I have, and it's. I'm impressed with it. I think that I'm still going through it because, you know, I read like 4 books at once as I prepare for different episodes. So I move back and forth between them, and which I never thought I would do. I couldn't do that when I was younger. I had to do one book at a time. But that's not possible now. You know, it's well written. I'm impressed. Very succinct. But they do a good job. They get a lot of information in a really, you know, in a limited amount of pages. Some good photos in there.
Oh, yeah. No, that's... So, when I thumbed through it, I looked at all the photos and I read, you know, here and there. But I didn't actually sit down and invest time into it. So I loved what I saw from just looking at it, but I need to actually sit down and study it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like I said, I'm still going through it. I started jumping all around in it. If you haven't gotten it already, definitely do. I saw it in an Odyssey. Oh, I saw it at Whole Foods. Yeah. So it's everywhere. And of course, but the easiest thing is get it on Amazon. Yes. Have them ship it to you. So,
yeah.
Well, speaking of Mickey and merchandise, in episode 66, we left off with Steamboat Willie opening in New York's Colony Theater on November 18th, 1928, and it was a smash hit. The studio immediately began producing the soundtracks for Plain Crazy, Galloping Gaucho, and a new Mickey Mouse short, The Barn Dance. The work became overwhelming for the small staff, so Walt wired his friend Carl Stalling in Kansas City and offered him a job with the studio. The addition of Stalling had an immediate impact as the soundtracks became as sophisticated as the animation. Now, Mickey Mouse cartoons quickly became a national phenomenon. An average Mickey Mouse cartoon required more than 10,000 drawings for 7.5 minutes on screen. And once the animation was completed, it took many other artists and technicians to finish production of the cartoon. At the same time, sound effects technicians, musicians, film editors, and voice actors would do their work. The studio staff grew in response to audiences' demands for more Mickey Mouse. And despite this, the staff was still working near the poverty line because Walt put most of the profits back into new projects. So Walt and Roy were anxious to find ways to capitalize on Mickey's popularity. Now, Walt recalled the moment opportunity presented itself in the fall of 1929. He said, "I was in New York, and a fellow kept hanging around my hotel, waving $300 at me, and saying he wanted to put the mouse on the paper tablets children use in school. As usual, Roy and I needed money, so I took the $300. Now, this deal provided Walt and Roy with some much-needed cash and led them to realize there may be other opportunities to promote Mickey on products. The 5.5-inch by 8.75-inch tablet featured a black, white, and red cover with Mickey Mouse sitting at a school desk, holding a red apple in his left hand for the teacher, and a history book propped open on the desk. Now, there were other tablets that came out around this time, but this is the only one that said that had the copyright Walt Disney on it.
Yeah. And do any of these still exist? I don't remember if you've ever told me that before.
It took a very long time, but yes, they finally have found one.
Wow.
Of a couple of these. So
that's insane. Paper products do not last. They don't stand the test of time at all. So no. That's great.
Yeah, but what they're still trying to look for is the original contract, because who was the fellow that did this?
Oh.
And that's sort of what's been lost.
Well, and see, I wouldn't have even went there with my thoughts, so now you opened up a big old wormhole there.
Yeah, but Dave Smith has talked about that. That they have searched and searched for that contract.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Now, in January 1930, Carolyn Charlotte Clark, who made a living selling cookies and novelties during the Depression, decided to put her sewing skills to use to earn some extra money. She sent her 14-year-old nephew, Bob Clampett, who would later become a director of Warner Brothers cartoons, and he was the creator of one of my favorite cartoon series when I was a little boy, Beanie and Cecil, to the Alex Theater in Glendale to watch the Mickey Mouse cartoon several times as he sketched the mouse, since no illustrations of Mickey were available other than movie posters. And from those sketches, Clark made the first stuffed Mickey Mouse doll. But Bob Clampett's father very wisely advised Charlotte to obtain Walt Disney's permission to sell the dolls. So she drove to the Walt Disney studio and met with Walt and Roy. I just love how, you know, you hear these stories how people just drive to the studio and, you know, walk
so
in.
So casually.
They meet. Yeah. I know. They just meet with Walt and Roy. Well, they loved the dolls so much that they rented a house near the Hyperion studio, which would later earn the nickname the Dollhouse, where Clark would create her dolls. At first, the dolls were purchased by Walt and Roy to give to friends and business acquaintances and special visitors to the studio. After a photo with Walt and one of the dolls appeared in Screenplay Secrets magazine and several newspapers, demand for dolls by the public became overwhelming. By November 1930, Clark was producing up to 400 dolls per week and selling them at the May Company and Bullocks for $5 each. The stores are making a good profit since they purchased the dolls for $2.50. When demand exceeded what Clark and her staff could produce, Walt and Roy released the doll pattern through the McCall Company of New York for 35 cents so people could make their own dolls. Many families could not afford the price of a doll during the Depression, and it was important to Walt that every child who wanted a Mickey Mouse doll should have one.
Yeah, and that's just about as brilliant as you can get. Mm-hmm. So I wish that would happen more often these days. But granted, we haven't had that many problems, so...
Yeah, but the thing is, even though it's said on the pattern that this is for personal use, not for manufacturing, a lot of out-of-work seamstresses got through the Depression by making their own, by making, you know, Mickey and Minnie dolls from these patterns. And then, you know, for a donation, you know, gave it to you.
Wow.
So... So that's why sometimes when one of these dolls will appear in an auction, you really have to determine, is this a Charlotte Clark doll or is this one that was made from one of the patterns?
That makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
Now, this would not be the first time a cartoon character was merchandised. The popular Felix the Cat, created by cartoonist Otto Mesmer, was highly popular at this time. Felix was so popular, Charles Lindbergh chose Felix as his lucky mascot for his famous transatlantic flight. And a Felix the Cat doll was the very first image to be broadcast over television waves by the RCA Research Labs. Felix was the very first balloon featured in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And the image of Felix was on clocks, Christmas ornaments, and comic strips before Mickey Mouse made his appearance in Steamboat Willie.
Yeah, I've always really wanted a Felix clock or even a knockoff one with the cats. So I love those.
Yeah, I had one when I was a boy. My mother didn't like it. She thought it made too much noise.
I'm sure it is. So I used to have a classic wind-up style alarm clock with the two bells on top. And yeah, it was not popular for how noisy it was.
Yeah. Walt and Roy had been unhappy with their early efforts to merchandise Mickey Mouse through George Borgfeldt and Company. Walt and Roy were disappointed with the quality of the merchandise that didn't meet their standards, and the financial accounting associated with licensing was difficult. It was the partnership between Walt and Roy Disney and advertising executive Herman K. Kamen that launched Mickey into a commercial juggernaut. And you can learn more about Walt Disney and K. Kamen by listening to my segment titled K. Kamen and Mickey Mouse on the March 30th, 2015 episode of the Dis Unplugged Disneyland Show. And we'll have a link in our show notes to that episode. Now, Kamen, who was from Kansas City and had been working in sales promotion for a department store before moving to California, entered into a business agreement with Walt and Roy, allowing him to manage the licensing for Mickey Mouse and the royalty payments with a 50-50 split. By the end of the year, Mickey Mouse and the Disney label was on $10 million of manufactured goods. This is 1930 dollars we're talking about. So... In 1930, Mickey Mouse made his first appearance in a comic strip for King Features. The first Mickey Mouse book was published, and Mickey Mouse toys were flooding shops in the United States and Europe. At Woolworth's toy department, a child with a dime could purchase a Mickey Mouse Big Little Book, a wind-up toy, or a bisque Mickey Mouse figurine. Five and Dime stores across the United States sold countless Mickey Mouse items for 10 cents, like tin litho wind-ups, celluloids, moving or walking wooden Mickey pull toys, and coloring books. There were Mickey Mouse china tea sets, bisque toothbrush holders, puzzles, framed Mickey pictures, boxed board game sets, dart boards, alphabet blocks, paint and printing sets, plug-in toy stoves with electrical heating units. Oh, they made some good stuff there. Balloons, domino sets, toothbrushes, combs, and fountain pens, all emblazoned with Mickey's smiling face. During the worst economic period in the United States, the Great Depression, the public couldn't get enough of Mickey Mouse. Many historians agree that 1933 was the worst year of the Depression. And in that year, Mickey received 800,000 fan letters, more than any other Hollywood star. Like many U.S. companies at the time, the Ingersoll Waterbury Clock Company was in receivership. Kamen entered in an agreement with the Ingersoll Waterbury Clock Company to put Mickey's likeness on wristwatches and pocket watches. The watches were introduced to the public at the 1933 Chicago Century of Progress Exposition. The wristwatch sold for $2.95 and the pocket watch for $1.50. The watches were so popular, despite the country being in the depths of the Depression, that the watch company's financial troubles were quickly behind them as they came out of receivership. The Mickey Mouse watch became such a cultural icon that it was included in a time capsule at the 1939-1940 World's Fair in Queens, New York.
That's so cool.
I know. Craig, do you have a Mickey Mouse watch?
I have one of the Ingersoll Mickey Mouse pocket watches that they sell at Walt Disney World in Disneyland. I don't know if they're still for sale. That was Kylie's wedding present to me. Was
oh, nice.
Giving me that so I could wear it while we were getting married. So I had wanted that pocket watch for, I don't even know how long, years and years. Mm-hmm. And so she surprised me with it. So that I do have that just because of its importance to me. I don't carry it around regularly. Mm-hmm. So I do need to get it in another Ingersoll one. So I don't want just anyone. Like I've seen refurbished ones before in the past of the wristwatch that mm-hmm. I would love to have one of those. So yeah. I want the authentic thing. So I would do for one of the now produced Ingersoll ones. But if I can have one from that classic time period, that's a memento that I would just cherish that.
Yeah. I have a number of them, but I do have the reproductions they made of the original Ingersoll watch, but I don't have an original.
Yeah. I love them so much. They are by far my favorite Mickey Mouse souvenir item. I'm not huge into watches, but when I see pretty watches, I usually love them. And I mean, I even had a Mickey Mouse watch growing up when I was a kid too. But then I went through that phase for like 15 years where I was like, no, I cannot wear anything on my wrist ever. I don't like it. It's uncomfortable. And so who knows? It's probably in a box somewhere back at my parents' house, just sitting there waiting for me to rediscover it.
Yeah. Even my, my Apple Watch, I have the Mickey Mouse face on it. Where he's tapping his little foot.
I did that. And then I will admit, I switched to the Toy Story ones once mm-hmm. Those came out. But then I shattered my Apple Watch, and it hasn't mattered since.
Oh. I broke mine once. But luckily, because I know myself well, I had insurance. So they replaced it. Anyway, the Ingersoll Waterbury Clock Company wasn't the only company Mickey Mouse saved from bankruptcy. In 1934, the Lionel Train Corporation sales and profits had slumped during the Great Depression, and they were in court-ordered receivership. Kamen entered into a licensing agreement with Lionel, who produced the number 1100 Mickey Mouse handcar, which featured Mickey and Minnie Mouse with their arms pumping up and down as if they were powering the handcar. The toy came in a colorful box with 8 sections of curved metal track to form a 27-inch circle. Selling for $1, this became the must-have Christmas toy in 1934 and saved Lionel from bankruptcy. And a lot of these things that we're talking about that I've already gone through, you can see at the Walt Disney Family Museum. They have a display case covering a wall that has many of the original items from the 30s in there.
I would love that. Yeah. And that's why I need to go one day.
That's right. You do. In 1935, Lionel sold a Mickey Mouse circus train featuring a locomotive, a coal-shoveling Mickey Mouse stoker, and 3 brightly colored cars, a band car, a circus car, and a dining car, incorporating Mickey Mouse and his friends into the design. The set also included a freestanding painted wooden Mickey Mouse circus Barker figurine and a cardboard Lionel Mickey Mouse circus tent. This set sold for $2. So quite a deal. Lionel still makes Mickey Mouse trains and carriages, and the price is significantly more.
Yeah.
But you can check those out online.
I love model trains. So those were my growing up, one of my uncles had a big model train set, and it was always something that I told myself I was going to get into one day. And then when I started looking at the prices for them, then I decided that that's just not possible.
Yeah, they're not inexpensive. I had, you know, a Lionel train set when I was a boy, but I think most boys my age did.
Yeah, we had our train that we would pull out only at Christmas time, but considering I think my parents knew that we'd be little monsters and destroy it, I doubt it was a Lionel. So maybe they wrote it on the side of the box.
Well, beginning in 1934, Kamen produced lavish merchandise catalogs for department stores and specialty shops, eager to order the latest Mickey Mouse merchandise for their store shelves. Kamen also developed sales promotion plans and giant window displays with cutouts of Mickey Mouse and other Disney stars, like the 3 Little Pigs for stores. Kamen also designed Christmas window displays with Disney characters, which were hugely popular with store owners eager to attract holiday shoppers. Thanks to Kamen's expertise and guidance, Mickey Mouse quickly rose to the top when it came to selling merchandise with products for people of all incomes. Manufacturers rushed out more products with the images of Mickey, Minnie, and their friends, who were gaining popularity: Donald Duck, Pluto the Pup, and Goofy. A 1934 survey of 70 manufacturers of Disney character and Mickey Mouse merchandise reported that approximately 10,000 jobs had been created to meet the demand for the merchandise. In 1937, Kamen stated, "Mickey's cheerful countenance will sell anything."
That is just insane. 10,000 jobs during a period in the United States when that just, you know, that was very necessary. It's what was needed, but it wasn't what was happening. I mean, that's incredible.
It is. It just goes to show you just how much the public needed, I think, a character like Mickey with his optimism and never give up and facing adversity. And you know, meeting adversity head on and overcoming it, and providing humor.
Yeah,
because at that time there wasn't a lot of humor in people's lives.
Well, and it also, none of it would have been possible if the right decisions weren't being made at the right times. None of that could have happened. So it's another one of those situations with Walt where we're lucky where everything just fell into place perfectly.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, we're at that point in the show again. I know it's it's everyone's favorite because they get to play along with us. It is the This Day in Disney History. This time it is the week of September 15th, and Craig and I are delighted to welcome back Alexander to challenge Craig's knowledge again. Alexander, so are you raring to go again this week?
Oh, definitely. I'm all Disney. I'm all prepared.
Good. Well, I know you have Craig worried after last week when you were able to talk about President Eisenhower and the award that he gave Walt Disney. I mean, that was very good. It shows you definitely know your Disney history. So tell us what. How do you, when you're not at a Disney theme park, how do you incorporate Disney and Walt Disney into your life, at home, into your personal life?
We watch Disney films as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do you have a particular character that you're partial to? Do you have a favorite?
Actually, no, I do not like any of the characters more than others, actually. Or at least I do not have a favorite character. However, I do have a favorite classic Disney film.
Oh, what's that?
It's actually Fantasia.
Oh, now that's unusual. You don't hear many people say that Fantasia is one of their favorites. So what do you like about that film?
Well, first off, I enjoy classical music a lot, mm-hmm. and so I like how, the Nutcracker, the Toccata and Fugue, and the Sorcerer's Apprentice, they incorporate that into the film. And another thing is, I've seen, previews from back in the day that call it a film 10 years before its time. I think that describes it beautifully because there are a lot of special effects that look equivalent to today's computer animation, such as the snowflakes and the smoke in the volcanoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. There's an interesting story. I read this decades ago, so I've not re-researched it to see its validity, but I think you would enjoy it. It's they, in order to get the Rite of Spring, the Walt Disney Studios really had to work on it because Stravinsky did not want to give it to them. And the story goes that it was not copyrighted in the United States because, it was written in Russia. And so when he refused to give the studio the rights to it, he was very politely told, we can use it with or without your permission. We'd much prefer to use it, with your permission and to pay you rather than using it without your permission and not paying you. So, not quite in those words, but that was the message that was received. So he gave his permission very reluctantly. So he was then invited to the screening for the Rite of Spring, the Paleozoic Crawl, as some people call it. And he was handed a copy of the score. And he says, I have my own. I have the original. And they said, you don't have this version. Because as you probably know, they edited it, to fit into that short little segment of the rise and fall of the dinosaurs. And oh my gosh, he was appalled. He had nothing good to say about Fantasia. So I thought Alexander, you might enjoy that little story. So
yes, but that was a very interesting to know.
Yeah. So let's get on now with our history quiz. So first of all, for our listeners at home, the rules are for our contestants, or if you're playing against each other at home, you get 3 points if you choose not to hear the multiple choice options for a correct answer. If you choose to hear the multiple choice options, you will receive 2 points for a correct answer. If you ask me to remove an incorrect option, you will receive 1 point for a correct answer. If your opponent gets the incorrect answer, you have the option of answering it correctly for 1 point. Some questions may have opportunities to earn bonus points. You can earn 1 point for each bonus question correctly answered. In the event of a tie, there will be a tiebreaker question. You may find having a pencil and paper at the ready helpful for the bonus question. For our players at home, remember, no Yahooing, Googling, Binging, or asking your friend Alexa for the answers. Okay, so Alexander, since you are our guest, you have the option of receiving the question or passing the first question on to Craig.
I think once again I'll receive it.
All right, so for September 15th, what Epcot Pavilion reopened after a refurbishment on September 15th, 1996?
96. I think I'll go with the multiple choice, please.
All right, is it A, the Imagination Pavilion, B, Universe of Energy, C, the Land Pavilion, or D, the Norway Pavilion? This is 1996.
I believe that you said A is the Imagination Pavilion?
Correct.
I believe it is A.
Okay, is that your final answer?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, that is incorrect. So, Craig, let's go over to you. Is it Universe of Energy, Land Pavilion, or Norway Pavilion that opened on September 15th, 1996?
I am almost confident that it was either 96 or 97 that Ellen was added to the Universe of Energy. So I'm going with Universe of Energy.
You are correct. And yes, it... Not only did Ellen get featured in this, Bill Nye the Science Guy, game show host Alex Trebek, and actress Jamie Lee Curtis. So, okay, Craig, for a bonus point, what was the original name of the pavilion, of the show?
I don't know. I can't even think of anything. I'm stumped.
All right. Okay, Alexander, you have a choice. You have a chance of getting this bonus point. We knew this as Ellen's Energy Adventure, but it had another name when it first opened. Do you know the name for 1 point?
I think I will go with what it says on the outside, which is simply the Universe of Energy.
The show though was called Ellen's Energy Crisis. And then they changed it to Ellen's Energy Adventure, so probably for obvious reasons. So anyway,
okay, it was a nightmare for her.
Yeah. Okay, all right. Okay, Craig, for September 16th, what Disneyland attraction closed on September 16th, 1995 for refurbishment and reopened 2 months later? I'm sorry, this should be, I caught my own error. This should be 1955.
Okay.
What Disneyland attraction closed on September 16th, 1955 for refurbishment and reopened 2 months later?
I will go with multiple choice, please.
Okay. A, the Chicken of the Sea Pirate Ship Restaurant. B, Utopia. C, Disneyland's Canal Boats of the World. Or D, the Phantom Boats.
I'm going to go with D.
The Phantom Boats?
Yeah.
Okay. That is incorrect. Okay, so Alexander, over to you. So September 16th, 1955, a Disneyland attraction closed, reopened 2 months later. Is it the Chicken of the Sea Pirate Ship Restaurant, Utopia, or Disneyland's Canal Boats of the World?
Well, based on documentaries I've seen, I do know that Autopia was one of Disneyland's big non-cooperative rides during its first days of after being open, so I believe my answer would have to be B, Autopia.
Okay. Final answer.
Yes, I think I'll stick with that.
Okay. That's a good guess, because you're right. By the end of the opening day, I think one car was working. But it was actually Disneyland's Canal Boats of the World, because basically there was nothing there. So it closed after 2 months of operation, and it will be reimagined and renamed the Storyland Canal Boats. They had the time to actually put in all the scenes.
So,
interesting story. Those poor little narrators had nothing to narrate in the very beginning.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Okay. I believe it's Alexander's turn. Mm-hmm. So September 17th. Alexander, this is tough because at this time of year, everything's early Disney history, well before you and probably your parents were born. The ABC television series Walt Disney Presents airs for the last time on September 17th, 1961. The following week, what will be the new name of the series? And a bonus point is available.
This time, I think I will go with my feeling for this one, and I believe it is Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color.
Good, go with your gut. Excellent. That is 3 points for you. Okay, you are absolutely correct. Okay, here's your bonus question: on what network will Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color air? Now, there were three at the time. Hard to believe, I know.
I know. There was ABC, NBC, and CBS.
Mm-hmm.
I know. So, I think I might have to go with CBS, because there were some other rival series on ABC at the time, so I don't think Walt would want to find some vacancy.
You're right, there were issues with ABC, but the answer is NBC with the colorful peacock. So anyway, but very good, Alexander, you're ahead. Okay, 3-2. So, Craig, over to you.
Okay.
All right. Voice actress June Foray, perhaps best known as the voice of Rocket J. Rocky Squirrel on the animated Rocky and Bullwinkle show, is born in Springfield, Massachusetts on September 18th, 1917. On what Disney attraction can you hear her voice?
I will go with multiple choice.
All right. Is it A, Spaceship Earth? B, Pirates of the Caribbean? C, Muppet Vision 3D? Or D, The Living Sea with Nemo and Friends?
Sorry, what was A again?
Spaceship Earth.
I'm gonna go with, I think, A, Spaceship Earth.
Okay. That is incorrect. Okay, so, Alexander, over to you. Where can we hear Rocky the Flying Squirrel's voice? What Disney attraction? So is June Foray on Pirates of the Caribbean, Muppet Vision 3D, or The Living Sea with Nemo and Friends?
Well, of the three, actually, you know, my first guess was pirates, because June Foray was known for putting on, like, wacky voices, that mm-hmm. type of thing. But there is a character in Nemo and Friends that has, like, a bucktooth kind of voice, that bluish fish. So I think I would have to go with D, Nemo and Friends.
Okay. Final answer?
Yes, I think I'll stick with that.
Okay, you know, should have gone with your first one. It's Pirates of the Caribbean.
It dawned on me right after I got it wrong.
Yeah, she is the wife of the man getting dunked in the well by pirates.
Yes. That's
Carlos,
that's, reasonable.
Don't be a chicken.
And it sounds very Rocky-esque. And that's what, I could hear the mousiness right after mm-hmm. once I started to think through.
The mousiness. Anyway, I was very surprised when I came across that. So, anyway, okay. Okay, Alexander, to you for September 19th. Walt Disney gives what will be his last press conference on September 19th, 1966, to provide details about the development of what project?
Oh, I know this one. It's the Mineral Springs Ski Resort.
Right. Well, I'm going to give that to you, but it is because you were so close. It's the Mineral King Ski Resort. You're absolutely right. Excellent. He speaks about the development of the Mineral King Ski Resort in Southern California. Disney's Sky Crown Resort will feature skiing, an alpine village, a skating rink, a 5-story hotel, dormitories for young people, and restaurants. And I did a whole show on this for our Disneyland show on what this would have been and why it was never built. So, Alexander, excellent. 6 points. Okay, Craig. So it's 6-2. So, Alexander, you are well ahead here. Craig, over to you. September 20th. Author Upton Sinclair is born in Baltimore, Maryland on September 20th, 1878. Sinclair devoted his writing career to documenting and criticizing the social and economic conditions of the early 20th century. A book he wrote in 1936 was the inspiration for a Walt Disney production live-action musical film. What is the name of this film?
I am going to have to do multiple choice.
Okay, is it A, Newsies, B, Follow Me Boys, C, The Gnome-mobile, or D, The Happiest Millionaire?
I genuinely do not know this. I only know one book that Upton Sinclair's written, so The Jungle.
Mm-hmm. That's probably his most famous book. Yeah.
I mean, that was required reading for me way back when I was in high school. I'm not sure if that's still the case anymore. I'm going to go with Happiest Millionaire, D.
Okay. That is incorrect. Okay, Alexander, over to you. Upton Sinclair, 1936 book inspired a Walt Disney live-action musical film. Was it A, Newsies, B, Follow Me Boys, or C, The Gnome-mobile?
Let me see. Well, I know Newsies is about, a group of newsboys who sing to get their to get through their problems. That is the as far as social problems go, that is a big one. I would think Upton Sinclair to cover, and I do remember that film, so I believe I would have to go with A, Newsies.
You know, and that's why I included it in there, but you're not going to believe this. His 1936 book, The Gnome-mobile, was the inspiration for Disney's 1967 musical film, The Gnome-mobile.
Okay.
Wow. Isn't that remarkable?
Yeah. What is it about, actually?
I don't know. I've not read it. I've only read The Jungle. So I would have to see. Is it really about a bunch of gnomes in the redwood forest, you know, the Pacific Northwest? So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see, to read. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, Alexander, to you, September 21st, animator, cartoon artist, screenwriter, producer, and director of animated films, Chuck Jones, is born in Spokane, Washington on September 21st, 1912, best known for his Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies shorts for Warner Brothers. Jones also worked at the Walt Disney Studios. What Disney film did Jones work on?
I feel like I've heard the answer to this before, but I have to go with multiple choice.
Okay. Is it A, the Pluto cartoon short Cold Turkey, B, Peter Pan, C, the Goofy cartoon short Father's Day Off, or D, Sleeping Beauty?
You know what? I think I may have heard somewhere, I do not remember where, but I think I may have heard that it was Sleeping Beauty at some point, so I think I'll have to go with D.
You are correct, and you heard it on this show, and we talked about Sleeping Beauty, so very good. Okay, all right. So 8 points, boy. Well, Craig, at least here's the last question, at least maybe here's an opportunity for you to get a respectable score.
Oh, thank you.
It is 8-2.
I would have got the last question without multiple choice. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. There you go. So, okay. What was the last e-ticket attraction added to Disneyland before the park switched to passports? Is it A, Space Mountain, B, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, C, Star Tours, or D, Captain EO?
I'm going to say I wish I remembered from all the stuff I researched with tickets and that I could think of this more correctly and quickly, but I'm going to say Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
You are absolutely correct. It was Big Thunder Mountain Railroad because Space Mountain had opened just shortly before that.
Yeah.
And the other two, Star Tours, Captain EO, opened after they switched to passports.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of the same thought process I went through.
Okay, excellent. Well, Alexander, you beat Craig this go-round, so his score is 8-4 in Alexander's favor.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Great job.
Thank you. It's an honor to be one of the winners.
So, well, now we have a tie. So that means we need you to come back next week so we can, break the tie. So I hope you will join us next time.
I will. I look forward to being on the show again. It's such an honor.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And like I said, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. So we will see you next week on Connecting with Walt.
Well, that is where our story is going to end for this episode. But as we're going to talk about in part two of Mickey Mania, Mickey wasn't all about merchandising during this era. Walt brought Mickey to the public in other ways besides film and besides merchandise. We're going to explore that next week, including, how many of you thought the Mickey Mouse Club started in the mid-50s? Well, you might be surprised to find out Mickey Mouse Club really started in the 30s. And We'll talk about that next time on Connecting with Walt.
It's quite the cliffhanger. You could have worked out perfectly on Rocky and Bullwinkle with that one.
Yes, that was one of my favorite cartoon shows when I was a boy. I like their snackiness. Well, many books, films, articles, interviews, and lectures were sourced for this episode of Connecting with Walt, including Mickey Mouse, The Evolution, The Legend, The Phenomenon by Robert Heide and John Gilman with Monique Peterson and Patrick White. The Book of Mouse, A Celebration of Walt Disney's Mickey Mouse by Jim Corcus. Walt Disney, An American Original by Bob Thomas. Mickey Mouse, 50 Happy Years, edited by David Bain and Bruce Harris. The Mickey Mouse Treasures by Robert Tiemann. Life Celebrates an American Icon, Mickey Mouse at 90. And Walt Disney, Saving America's Lost Generation by R.H. Farber. So, Craig, until next time, where can our listeners find you on the Diz Unplugged network of shows?
As always, you can find me on the Walt Disney World Edition. You can find me on the Universal Edition. You can find me on the Best and Worst of Walt Disney World. And then also the Diz Daily Fix. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Teleclaster. What about you, Michael?
Well, you can send me messages at michael@wdwinfo.com. Twitter, I'm at mbowling121. Facebook, I'm Michael Bowling, the one with the Connecting with Walt banner. Instagram, Michael Bowling the Diz. And you can connect with me and Craig on Twitter at ConnectWalt, our official Twitter page for Connecting with Walt. That is where, remember, if you want to get together to have a D23 Mickey birthday party, post, and you're in the Sacramento area, post on our Twitter page at ConnectWalt, and we'll see what we can do to get together in the next few weeks. If you'd like to listen to more shows on the history of Walt Disney, his studio, his Imagineers, and Disneyland, check out our Disneyland podcast archives for my Disney history episodes at disunplugged.com, and look for past episodes of Connecting with Walt on iTunes, where you can subscribe to our show and leave some positive reviews and ratings. Thank you for making us a part of your day. And remember, I only hope that we don't lose sight of one thing, that was all started by a man, Walt Disney, and his brother Roy.